Hi everyone, this is Dr. Cheryl Selman and welcome to What Women Must Know. Thank you for joining me today for another opportunity to have a profound, in-depth conversation about strategies that are really going to make a difference in your life. If you've been listening to the show in the past, you know that this show is all about empowering you with truthful information so you can make the most informed decisions possible regarding your health and well-being. And it's just great having you with me again for another show. And for those who may be visiting for the very first time, I want to welcome you and invite you to go to my Facebook page, which is What Women Must Know, and my website, which is also What Women Must Know, because I get to post these shows out on a regular basis. So if you don't get to listen live, you can just go over to one of those places, Facebook or whatwomenmustknow.com, and you'll be sent them. They'll be in your inbox waiting for you, along with other great educational information. So it's all about finding the most truthful information and really opening your mind to change, opening your mind to learning, opening your mind to new possibilities. And that is what our show is going to be all about today. We have a remarkable guest who will be sharing the keys to optimal health, but we're really going to be looking at some concepts that may be challenging. We're going to be putting a few of those concepts upside down on end, and we're going to be certainly opening your mind to new possibilities, as my guest did for me. So first of all, let me introduce my guest. He's Dr. Jack Cruz. He is a respected neurosurgeon and CEO of Optimized Life, a health and wellness company dedicated to helping patients avoid the healthcare burdens we typically encounter as we age. He is currently in private practice in the Gulf South. As a neurosurgeon, Dr. Cruz's research has been published in respected dental and medical journals. His popular blog, www.jackcruz.com, gets over 250,000 unique worldwide visitors per month from countries like Australia, Germany, Russia, and Zambia. So there's a lot more that I'd like to say about Dr. Jack Cruz, but it would take me for the rest of the show. So I'm just going to invite him to jump right in now, and I'd like to welcome Dr. Jack Cruz to the show.
Thank you.
Well, good morning. I'm doing this show early in the morning. It's pre-recorded, so Dr. Cruz can get up and watch the sunrise, and we're going to explain all that, because since I've been introduced to the work of Dr. Cruz and learning more about what he's doing, I've been watching the sunrise every morning as well. I'm blessed with a good view of the sunrise off my balcony, and I'm excited about the opportunity to have this conversation with Dr. Cruz, because he has really opened my mind. Dr. Cruz, I wrote a book called Hormone Heresy, which has been in print a while now. So I've really challenged so many of the beliefs and strategies and treatments for women over the years. And so I love what you're doing, because you are a total heretic. I resonate with heretics, and I just so appreciate the insight and courage you have to challenge so many of the beliefs we've been operating with, because what you're doing is really giving us some strategies that are going to lead us to greater health and kind of wake up to who we really are and what's possible. So let's start by talking about your understanding and approach. What's critical for optimal health?
Well, the first thing is that you have to unlearn to relearn, and you have to understand what is keeping you in prison. Generally, that's beliefs that are what I call convergent, not divergent. And you have to realize that there's a universe all around you that gets along perfectly fine. And it turns out the universe that humans are in, the ones that you and I are both interested in, have created their own little bubble within a bubble. And once you begin to realize, it's very easy for a physician to understand what I just said very easily, because we have a bird's eye view of the world around us, but also the world that our patients live in, and we see the struggles they have. In residency, we were given a paradigm of belief of how these things could be managed and dealt with. And I think when you come out of residency and you're in clinical practice for a period of time, you begin to realize that we're really good at certain things and we're really bad at the most important things. And that's when you get to a point in your career where you have to make a decision. You want to stay in line with the paradigm and just go to the nth degree, retire, and do well, which is pretty much what 95% of physicians do. Or do you want to go back to that medical school essay that you wrote and really try to figure out what it is that's driving chronic disease processes in man that allopathic medicine, functional medicine, any kind of healthcare practitioner has been really poor at probably for the last 125 years. And that's what drives me. I am not interested in most of the ideas that were put in my head through my training because I realize the good ones I use. The bad ones I've tried to diverge from. So in that sense, my come to Jesus moment, I'd love to tell you it was altruistic, but it wasn't. I was given a talk on minimally invasive spine surgery about 12, 13, 14 years ago. And I stood up at the podium to give the talk, and I got a horrible pain in my right knee. And turned out, just from standing up, I tore my knee meniscus. I didn't know that, but I happened to be in a room with a bunch of orthopedic surgeons and neurosurgeons, and the ortho guys told me at the end of the talk, I think you tore your knee meniscus. And one of their wives happened to work for a biotechnology company, and she came up to me and said, look, I think I know why this happened. I'm going to send you a book and six papers. And my husband said, you're a pretty smart guy. I think you can figure this out. Now, she was trying to give me a veiled message that Big Pharma was really the problem, and she was hoping I would go down that path. Unfortunately, since I am a divergent thinker, when I read the books and the papers that she sent me, it took me on a completely different path, a path that made me realize that my focus in biology was probably not the wisest thing. In fact, it turned out the reason why my knee meniscus really tore was all about light, water, and magnetism. And I realized at that point that I didn't know anything about light, water, and magnetism. Well, I shouldn't say anything, but not enough to move the needle for my patients, because I certainly wasn't moving the needle for myself, because at the time this happened, I was 6 foot two, 359 pounds. And through that process, when she led me through the door, you have two choices, you know, go through the door or not. So I went back to the medical school library in the town that I was in, and for 18 months, I followed the path that this book and these six papers led me on, and it took me to a far different place. And the irony of the story was I just met this lady again about a year ago. She's now divorced from this orthopedic surgeon, and she just said to me, I'm just stunned by where you went. She goes, this is not where I wanted you to go. And I said, well, that's kind of the whole point. My whole life has been learning things about where a paradigm of belief wants to take me, and I found that it wasn't good for me, and it certainly wasn't good for my patients. So when I started to use the things that I learned on myself, and I changed myself, that's why I said I wasn't very altruistic as a physician. I actually did it to myself first, and I probably became, I wouldn't say the first true mitohacker, but I was probably early on. I became what I call a black swan mitochondriac. And those are people that are very rare in nature. They are intensely curious, and they look for things, and they see things that other people just don't see, and they link concepts together, and they tie it back to the universal laws of quantum mechanics and physics of nature. And when I did it on myself, for your listeners who don't know anything about me, I stood in front of my family at a Thanksgiving dinner, I guess it was around 2004, 2005, at 359 pounds, and told them that in 1 year I was going to be wearing my brother-in-law's genes. And they all laughed at me. My wife didn't. And in 3 months, I lost 77 pounds. And 11 months, I lost 133 pounds by utilizing the principles that I learned from that simple book and those six papers.
Well, now that you've gotten everyone's attention, we're going to explore and we're going to go down that pathway to understand what truly will support health, what supports our life, what supports our body's ability to heal, which includes losing weight. But it's a very different paradigm from what we've been taught. And, you know, as you're talking, it reminds me of what I always say to my patients when I was a psychotherapist that goes, if you do what you've always done, you'll get what you've always gotten. In order to change, in order to transform, you have to step out of the box, whatever that may be. And you have to have an open mind, which is the most valuable asset we have as human beings to explore and find what is right. What's out of the box? All the answers that we're seeking are out of the box of what we've been taught in our paradigm.
I would take it further. I don't think it's out of the box. I don't think there is a box.
Ah. Oh, good. Just take it further.
Yeah, I think if you put limits on your thinking, you've already made a mistake. And when people say they use that cliche, it's great in conversation. But since we're having a conversation about this, something I'm pretty passionate about now, I want everybody to know that my perspective is decidedly different than most people you'll ever talk to. And the reason for that is I don't believe in consensus. I don't believe that there's any boundaries. And the reason I believe that is because the laws that I've learned about in nature truly don't have any boundaries. Every possibility is open because the environment is an open system. And that's what drives the two genomes that are inside of every of our cells. And we're not aware of that in medicine. We're just not. We're not aware of it in any branch of medicine. And the irony is the breadcrumbs that I may be right are everywhere in the published literature. And the thing is, what I do, especially like on my Dr. Jack Cruz Facebook page, every day I get a trend in medicine or a trend that's out there that people know about. And I put breadcrumbs out to show people what's really out there. It's published, but nobody's connecting the dots. And that's the real problem in medicine. We have tons of data. You know what the problem is? We don't have any doctors. We don't have any researchers that can take massive amounts of data, thin slice it, connect the dots, and make sense of it through the fabric of how things truly work. That's the key.
So let's talk about how things truly work.
Well, the number one thing, we can cut to the chase. Any of your audience that's listening to this, they need to be doing what probably you're doing and I'm doing right now. I'm standing outside, no shoes on, waiting for the sun to rise. And it's not risen yet. One of the things that I learned in the book that I mentioned before, the name of that book is called The Monk Who Sold His Ferrari by Robin Sharma. It's a very interesting book, but one of the key facts that kind of changed my life is there was a comment made by the protagonist in the book named Julian Battle that he made the comment that in a human life, we're designed to see 25,000 sunrises. And I thought to myself as a neurosurgeon, how many sunrises have I really seen up to this point at 40 years old? And I realized the answer was probably maybe 15 or 20. And through 2 years later, jumping through the pathways, all the things that I learned in the brain, I started to realize that this was the single biggest way to build wellness back. So for the last 15 years, I haven't missed one. And no matter what we do, in fact, when you asked me to speak with you, I told you I wanted to do it early because I thought by doing our little interview here during the sunrise, it may inspire some other people who'll be listening to this to begin to change this, because I'm going to tell you, it's the single biggest thing to change your health. If you can do that as the one takeaway from this interview, I would consider it a success.
So why is watching the sun come up every morning the single biggest thing you can do for your health?
because it controls your circadian biology, which controls every single process within your body. It's the single most important thing to not only living, but actually improving your health span. And I tell all my members this, look, everything you're going to learn from me doesn't mean that you're going to have, you know, immortal life. You're going to live 250 years old. We're all dying, okay? No one's getting out of this place alive. But here's the key. Optimal health is a choice. And you have a choice in how you die. And I can promise you this, if your existence is checking your email every morning and that's your son, or putting on your TV, you are going to die a pretty hellacious death. And you're going to get thrown into the meat grinder of medicine. You're going to wind up with Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, a brain tumor, diabetes. You're going to be fat as a house. You're going to be miserable when you're in menopause. You're going to have lots of different issues. The key thing is, if you decide to live like a wild animal, like you were designed by nature, you can actually do quite well. Starting with the sunrise is the key to that because it sets the circadian mechanism. In your brain, you have a clock behind your eyes called the suprachiasmatic nucleus. It's not important you remember the name, but it's the master clock, and that master clock talks to all the other clocks in your body. In front of every single DNA gene in humans, there is a peripheral clock. And it turns out that all these clocks in every different organ have a different gear timing mechanism. But the irony is, it turns out when light first enters the eye, that's what sets the chain of events in process. So if you get up and the first thing you do is look at your alarm clock, that is, say, either has blue, you know, digital lights or red digital lights, that ruins your clock timing mechanism. The clock timing mechanism that you're built for is the sunrise.
So this just resonated so strongly with me when I heard you talk about this and explain it, because we really are connected to nature. We are nature. We are an expression of nature, and yet we have created our lives that are so artificial. Everything is artificial.
That's why I would disagree with you. I think that modern humans are zoo animals. I think all of our patients, and this may be greatly offensive to many people listening to this, but that's okay. See, the divergent beliefs of a black swan mitochondriac are this. You have to bathe in the discomfort of this thought, because there's nothing about modern humans that is how we're supposed to live. And I mean nothing.
Right.
And when you strip it down, you begin to realize that the difference, I tell all my members that it's amazing that we don't have to teach lions and hippos about bioidentical hormones or how to eat or how to live. They just do it, and they do it in nature constantly. If you look at us, we have to teach humans what to do for one reason and one reason only. We have this quantum computer in our head called the brain that allows us to break all of nature's laws. And we do it in such subtle ways that after 5,000 years of civilization, we don't even realize how many of those laws we've broken. And then we're shocked when we get to the 20th century and we have all these huge chronic disease paradigms. Well, it turns out, guess what? They're a culmination of every single law we break.
And it's so evident because we have what's more than 50% of Americans are dealing with chronic diseases that never really plagued us before. And we don't have solutions in the way we have been going. You know,
I'll give you a perfect example. I use this one quite a bit because this one usually catches people's attention because it offends beliefs, and that's what I do. In 1900, colon cancer was the 37th leading cause of cancer in the United States. It was way, way down on the list. Okay, 5 generations later, 2018, colon cancer is the second leading cause of death in humans. So if you believe Darwin was right about evolution, explain to me how you go from 37 to 2. Because guess what? His theory doesn't explain that.
Mm-hmm.
So it turns out there's another explanation. Why things change so fast. And it turns out if you look at the environment that humans lived in 1900 and compare it to the one we're in right now. For example, think about you and I. We're sitting here both watching the sunrise, communicating over a device that emits radio frequency and microwaves. Here's the benefit to the people listening to this. This is a wonderful thing that we're doing, sharing ideas, opening people's minds to new ideas, but at the same time, you and I are actually harming ourselves by doing it. And we don't realize that. That did not occur in 1900. Could that potentially be part of the reason why people now die of colon cancer at such a high rate? The answer is actually yes. And we don't, our job as clinicians is to get that information to people for them to understand how the use of the abnormal part of the electromagnetic spectrum can cause this problem. See, the electromagnetic spectrum that Jack is waiting for right now to be wirelessly connected with is that sun. I'm waiting for the balanced frequency between red and blue light to come stimulate my pituitary gland to release all the normal circadian hormones that are supposed to be released between 6 and 10 a.m. Because now when that happens, they'll communicate that message to my colon. And my colon will realize, hey, it's morning. And my colon will then tell me in about half an hour, Jack, you should probably eat something. And right after I eat, there'll be a normal reflex that is found in wild humans, but not in humans probably listening to you and I talk, called the gastrocolic reflex, which will stimulate you to have a morning bowel movement. And that bowel movement will look a certain way. It'll look like a Bristol stool number 4, what we call a smooth sausage. So if that process in you doesn't happen with routine regularity, guess what? Clock genes between your eye and your colon peripheral clock genes don't really talk properly because they don't have the light signal for this to occur in your body. That's the reason why colon cancer is raised up so high.
Well, So it's about understanding why we need to reconnect with the basic frequencies of life, and bring them back into our daily life. Bring them back into our daily life. So I want us to explore as we unfold this understanding. Let's talk about the role of the mitochondria, because that's a critical piece. And you call yourself a mitochondriac, and I'm, you know, falling right in line with you as a budding mitochondriac myself. Can we talk about what that is and why that's so important?
Yeah, well, I think before we get into that, I think we need to let the audience know where the focus, why the focus is on what it's on, and then to understand it.
Okay.
Every cell has two genomes, and the genome that most of your listeners probably have heard the most about their entire life is the nuclear genome where the DNA is. That's where medicine's focus has been since 1953 when we discovered DNA. Turns out that that myopic focus is the reason why we're missing the prize in medicine. Turns out the other genome, called the mitochondrial genome, is a genome that's quite small. It's only about 37 genes, 13 of which control the key proteins that control energy metabolism in your body. So that means every single energy powerhouse in a cell. For example, a basic neuron has about 3,600 mitochondria in it. There's other cells that have more. There's other cells that have less. In fact, your red blood cells have none. But here's the interesting part of this mitochondrial genome. You only get it from your mom. And your mom got it from her grandmother. It's only maternally inherited. And it turns out that when that mitochondrial genome goes awry and it's signaling, that's what turns on and turns off the nuclear genome. So if you begin to understand these two genomes, how do they work? They work just like your computer or your cell phone. You have hardware, which is the device, and then you have software that runs the hardware. And it turns out that mitochondrial DNA is the software that runs the hardware. Therefore, it's much more important. And anyone who owns a computer or a phone probably knows that if you get rid of your software in your phone, it will become pretty much a useless doorstop. The same thing is true with your computer. But see, we don't have that focus in medicine. We're waking up to it. Like when you read the literature, you begin to see this term called epigenetics. Well, it turns out epigenetics is part of the software program that mitochondria are heavily involved with in terms of marking the nuclear genome to spit out what actually should happen in a certain environment. So your mitochondria is your powerhouse. What do mitochondria deal with? Most people who probably have listened to your show think about food from proteins, carbohydrates, and fats. You will never hear a black swan mitochondria ever talk about food that way, because the input where food gets stripped down to its core occurs in the mitochondria. It doesn't occur in your stomach like you've probably been told. And it turns out the input and the output of mitochondria is electrons and protons. So what did Jack just say? Jack just told you that food is an electromagnetic footprint tied to electrons and protons. So that means you as a listener have to say to yourself, just like I did 15 years ago, how much do you know about electrons and protons? And back then, for me, I didn't know very much. And that's when a black swan mitochondriac makes the decision to become an autodidact. What does that mean? It means that you have to go back and teach yourself through self-learning the things that you didn't learn in your previous education. And in medical school, I didn't learn anything about electrons and protons, with one exception. I was told that the input to the inner mitochondrial membrane was called electron chain transport, and that mitochondria have another part to them called proton coupling through something called the ATPase. And again, these are complex topics, but the bottom line is every single food that's on this planet is linked to one, absolutely one chemical reaction. And most of you know that you learn this chemical reaction in third grade. That's called photosynthesis. The sun creates the entire food web on planet Earth. So that means there has to be an electromagnetic barcode in every food. And it turns out that your mitochondria is designed to decipher that cipher in the electrons and protons that are programmed by sunlight in the seasons and the latitude where you live. So, for example, that's why some people who, say, live within the equatorial boundaries can eat coconuts and pineapples and lots of fruits all day, because they happen to live in an area where the sun doesn't vary. For 12 hours a day, it rises and sets, and it never changes. Now, people that live up in Boston have no business eating a pineapple or a coconut right now, given that we're at the end of October, because if you can find a pineapple and coconut that grows in your local environment, we're not talking about going into Whole Foods and saying, hey, look, it's here. If it doesn't grow in your environment, you have no business eating it. Why? Because your mitochondria will spit out a signal that will cause significant damage in your nuclear DNA and also actually within your cell. And it does this because mitochondria make other signals called free radicals. And everybody's probably heard of free radicals, but you probably don't understand them the way you should. And it turns out this free radical signal is actually what is part of the beginnings of the epigenetic change program that operates deep inside us.
Wow. So continue on. I'm learning as you go. So let's just continue this conversation.
Well, if you want me to take it to the next step, since we can make this about ladies, I can give you an example that builds on the concept that I just gave you. Because I guarantee you there's probably some ladies out there that have one of these two problems. And I'm going to show you just how amazing nature truly is. And actually, the basis of all of this science that we're talking about comes down to quantum mechanics, to what we call quantum electrodynamic theory. That's the science that deals with electrons and protons. So I'm going to give you two diseases that everybody knows: vitiligo and melasma. Okay, you go to a dermatologist right now, anywhere in the United States, they're going to tell you they're probably the two of the hardest diseases for them to understand. And
discoloration of the skin, just for people to understand.
For people to know, Michael Jackson had vitiligo, and that's the reason we had all his plastic surgery. And that's usually for people that to white patches on their skin. It destroys melanin. Melanin is the pigment that actually is made out of aromatic amino acids that absorbs UV light. Now, melanin in melasma, most ladies probably listening to this, I guarantee about 50 or 60% of your audience probably has melasma. That's why they use makeup and foundation to cover it. And the older you get, or especially when you have babies, you tend to really get this around your malar part of your face, cheekbones. And here's the interesting part. That is caused by the blue light that you ladies use to put your makeup on. It's also caused by your computer. It's also caused by the lights that you had in your newly renovated kitchen when you argued with your husband that we need to put LED lights in there versus no lights. Now, how does this happen? It actually happens through this free radical signaling that we just mentioned in your mitochondria. So let's give you the story in vitiligo. In vitiligo, what happens is we make a free radical signal that most of you have heard about. It's called hydrogen peroxide. Hydrogen peroxide is probably more well-known for wounds and cuts and dyeing your hair. But ladies tend to know about hydrogen peroxide because when they put it in their hair, it bleaches their hair. What does it do? It removes melanin from your hair and allows you to change the color. Well, guess what? When you have too much hydrogen peroxide in your skin and you have no way to get rid of it, you actually bleach your own skin. So you kill the melanocytes. Okay? Now, there's an enzyme in your body called catalase that takes hydrogen peroxide and turns it into water, H2O, and a proton. And that proton is usually in the form of H+. Catalase controls that, and believe it or not, catalase is a heme protein. Heme protein means it's related to hemoglobin. And guess what controls that protein? Turns out it's red light that I'm getting right now from the sun as it rises here in New Orleans. And that red light is incredibly important for controlling the enzymatic actions of catalase. So any woman who has vitiligo or any man that has vitiligo, by definition, this is considered an autoimmune condition, doesn't have enough red light in their lights. Now, let's talk about red light for a minute before we get to melasma. The sun is 42% infrared A light. That means from the time the sun comes up, which it's doing right now, to the time it sets, the one part of the spectrum of the sun that never changes is red. It's present no matter what. And it turns out red light is the thing that drives most of the regenerative programs in your body. So you know, probably, or you're beginning to understand why, if you have vitiligo or you have melasma, you should be doing what Jack's doing right now, looking directly into that sun. Because in the morning, even at the equator, when the sun rises, there's no UVA or UVB light at all. So it's not going to hurt you. As the sun starts to rise, you do get those other frequencies, so you don't want to look directly at it. You want to look to the side of it. But you still want to give that signal to your brain and your pituitary gland that the day has started, okay? And that will control this catalase process. Now, let's flip it around. Let's take one of your classic random listeners that are listening to this. Let's say she's a lawyer in Boston, and her day starts at 6:30, because she's really an alpha female, and she's the best lawyer in this law firm. Well, when she gets up at 6:30 to get to work in Boston, does the sun rise at 6:30 on October 27th? The answer is no. It doesn't come up until about 7:30. So did she ever see the sunrise today? The answer is no. The first thing that she saw was her iPhone when she checked her emails from her legal assistant, because today she has to prepare for a big case that she's going to trial on Monday. So she spent an hour and a half looking through her emails. Then she, of course, had to put makeup on, because God forbid a woman goes out the house and goes to work without makeup on. Well, ladies don't know this, but you know that your makeup blocks the frequencies of light that your skin is designed to get. So if you do this constantly, and you block your skin from the healing frequencies, but you allow the blue light from your phone and from your makeup light around your mirror to be the first thing that your body and skin sees, should be no shock to you why the melanocytes over your cheekbones and your forehead and then around your eyes, where the skin and the subcutaneous fat is thinnest, get stimulated by blue light to make melanocytes. See, dermatologists have told you that UV light is really what makes your skin dark. And it turns out the latest research that's published in the last 5 years shows that blue light, unopposed blue light, stimulates your melanocytes the most. And to take this even further, could that be the reason why the number one orbital cancer called ocular melanoma is off the charts? Because all of us now use blue light devices. Our computers that way. Remember when our ex-president Obama got rid of the digital signal and brought in the age of analog, I should say got rid of the analog signal, brought in the digital signal, we all went to LCD TVs. So every TV since 2009 has emitted a color temperature of blue light that's 5,750 Kelvin. Do you know what that is? That's solar noon. Do you think it's a wise thing to give your skin or your eyes the light information that it's solar noon at 6:30 or 6 o'clock in the morning when the sun's not due to come up till 7:30? The answer is no. But guess what? Humans have created this environment where this lady that we talked about in our hypothetical example has built a life of what we would call success. She's making $1 million a year. She's got fancy cars. She's got all this. But it should be no shock when she gets to 40, 45 years old. She's got painful periods. She's got PCOS. She has every single one of her babies via a fertility expert. Most of her kids were born jaundiced. They were placed under blue light to get rid of the jaundice. And she's got 3 scars on her pubic bone from C-sections. That's the reality of where melasma comes from. It's from the unopposed blue on your skin. And I just gave you a litany of other things that unopposed blue is linked to.
Right.
That's the magic of understanding light to the nth degree.
Well, unopposed blue light would be related to just about every condition that is going on with people.
Exactly
when their
right.
bodies are out of balance.
Well, that's the thesis that I had when I told you about my come-to-Jesus moment 15 years ago. But I will tell you, and I can say this to you right now with some pretty heavy data, is for 15 years, I've been waiting for the other side of this story to drop. And the reason why I wanted to give you this example here is I just gave a talk in June in Vermont that basically put a slide up that said, with time, it's going to be shown that most chronic diseases of humans starts at the surfaces of our body, meaning the gut surface, the skin surface, the eye surface, and the lung surface. And it's going to be linked to blue light or non-native EMF exposure. And the reason I said that, most of your audience goes back and reads my old stuff, they'll notice that I wrote something called the leptin prescription. And the leptin prescription really told everybody, as soon as the sun rises, you need to get out there and look at the sun for 3, 4, 5, 6 minutes, and then eat a big-ass breakfast filled with protein within 30 minutes. Now, most people, when they read the 6 steps that are in there, they never heard the words light, water, magnetism, but it turns out the leptin prescription is all about light. And the reason for that is AM light, as I'm looking at it right now, is balanced red and balanced blue. And it turns out this is the beauty of nature. Nature knows that blue light is the most active component of the solar spectrum. So that means that it has capabilities to really do a lot of things. In other words, it gets things moving in cells, and it turns out that red light is the antidote to blue. So in other words, it is the limiting factor on what blue light can do. And here's the thing that nobody realizes. When we went from incandescent to LED, halogen, whatever bulb you're using now, people don't realize that to save energy, we remove the red part of the spectrum, and we also remove the UV part. Incandescent bulbs used to have some UV light in them, and it turns out that we now live, 98% of our life is lived indoors. And, you know, most people listening to this will argue with me and say, oh, no, that's not true. I can promise you that it is true. And the key is you don't realize how that one single thing goes all the way back to 1874. And if you look at all the chronic diseases that we have, they began right around the late 1890s. And every time we spend 10% on technology, and that technology is anything tied to the power grid or to light, obesity rates go up 10%. And it's not just obesity. It's everything. That includes mental illness. It includes hormone problems. It includes all the diseases of age. And if you remember the analogy I used earlier about colon cancer, I told you it went from 37 to 2 from 1900 to 2018. Well, most people don't even realize that we created the light bulb in 1874, but then we created the AC power grid in 1893. And these things yoke up perfectly. We have so many people in my profession right now going out and telling people, oh, well, it's the bad food. It's the bad food. No, that's kind of just the added piece of wood on the fire. It turns out that light is the main driver, because guess what? What drives that free radical signaling program in your mitochondria that changes everything? Incident EMF. And EMF stands for electromagnetic force or radiation. That's what light is. Light is an electromagnetic disturbance in the environment. And it turns out everything in your mitochondria was built around using light to control oxygen. That's really the true essence and foundation of what a black swan is, and learning every single thing that happens between the incident light and the control or lack of control of oxygen is what I make my business. That's what I teach people. I don't teach people to be like me. I teach people how they need to think about themselves and the current environment that they're in, because people don't choose their life. Their habits choose their life, and they determine the results that they get. That's the big missing link in medicine. And we have to be stewards for patients to fully understand how the use of, you know, just to give you an analogy, because I know I'm focusing more on ladies here, but trust me, I get on the guys quite a bit. Just putting makeup on your face, just putting clothing on your breasts and blocking the sun creates huge problems. And we need to get to that point for people to understand that we need to get back to the way we do things properly. And once you do that, guess what? Most of those diseases, the beautiful part of the story that I teach people, that I learned, is that every single problem that we create, nature gives us a chance to fix it. We have regeneration programs in our body. That's part of what sleep's all about. It turns out those properties inside of us are active. But the problem is sleep is only optimized. And guess what the key mechanism is? AM sunlight. That's the reason why when you asked me to talk to you, I told you, let's do it, but I want to do it early. Why? Because I was hoping that you would allow me to get deep into what the sunrise truly means to me. It means everything. It is the giant compound pharmacy in the sky that every single cell in your body is optimized to. And your job is to create a life where that is your time. You don't let anybody, no matter what, get around it. And what you and I are doing right now is a perfect example that we need to set forth for every person that's listening to your talk right now. They need to create a life where in the morning you can still do work. What you and I are doing, we're educating people now, but we're doing it with us in mind. And I tell my members this, and this is probably the biggest thing I'm going to say to ladies out there. Who are you good for if you're not good enough for yourself? This is the biggest mistake that ladies make. They always subjugate themselves by putting their kids first, the career first, the husbands first. No. The credo of the black swan starts right here. You have to be selfish. When you get yourself right, and guess what? Since you're the leader of the families, and most places in the United States that's the case, when the ladies change, everything changes. And that's not how it happened in my house. I was the one that led the change, and my son followed me. Then my wife changed, and then when my wife changed, everything started to change for everybody. And it's the single most important thing for you to understand, that you have to get yourself right. And you have to realize that the AM time is your time. From the time that sun sets to the time, you know, you say you're 15 or 30 minutes in, I changed my OR schedule. I no longer start cases, you know, early in the morning like I used to. I have to see the sun. I just did a surgery yesterday morning, and everybody knew that I wouldn't be there until it was 7:30. And at 7:30, I was standing in the middle of the courtyard of the hospital, saw the sun come up for 3 or 4 minutes, and then we went in and did the case.
So a couple of questions. What do you say to people who've been taught that the sun is damaging and the cause of skin cancers? And mm-hmm. you know, I mean, I spend a lot of time in Australia, and I'll tell you that I go to the beach, and those kids are covered up from their ankles to their necks in a sun-protected suit.
I give them a history lesson. Do you know where that data came from? That's the first question I ask every dermatologist, and most of them go, no, they don't even know. You know where it came from? It came from children that were born with jaundice in the 1950s. You know what kind of light they used to put them under? UVA and UVB. No. UVA and UVB light. And guess what the kids got? They got retrolental hyperplasia. So the initial belief that UV light was bad came from that data. You know what they didn't tell you? What did I tell you earlier about the sun when it rose? Is there any UV light in that sun? No. And then after this retrolental paper came out, they moved to blue light. Here's the interesting thing. Blue light and UV light can get rid of jaundice in babies, but what people didn't realize, especially the dermatologists, I told you that the sun is a spectrum of frequency. So most people who are listening to this probably have heard of Pink Floyd. You know about the album cover when the light comes in, hits the prism, and breaks up into 7 colors. What you have to realize is if you use those colors out of its other color boundaries, it's a problem. So what did I tell you about blue light? It has to always be balanced by red in nature. Well, the light that we built doesn't have any red in it, and it also doesn't have purple. Let me ask you another question. Is there any place in nature where UV light exists without any other part of the spectrum? The answer is no. So guess where the belief came from? They never realized that the light that these kids got retrolental hyperplasia from, and when they started to study this, causes that. It turns out, this is the paradox that dermatologists don't like to talk about, and this is the reason why I'm their worst nightmare. You know what the interesting data is right now? There's now at least 20 papers in the literature that show the amount of solar exposure you get increases, or I should say decreases, all-cause mortality. What does that mean in English? It means that every single disease on this planet is reduced by sunlight. Okay? Now, that shocks them when they hear it, and I just throw the papers in front of them. But here's the best one. The doctors, the skin doctors, tell patients all the time that the sun causes skin cancer. Well, here's the interesting thing. Why is it in their own literature that it shows that those with the lowest vitamin D levels, which is only made by UVB light at 312 nanometers, get the worst cancers of the skin? Why is it that the frequency they blame the most when UV light is not present, those are the people that tend to get melanomas and skin cancers? Explain. And guess what? When I get in front of a group of them, it's like listening to, you know, a Bugs Bunny thing. Bidee, 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 that's all. They don't get it. I mean, you know the reason they don't get it? And this is very important for people to understand. Most of the doctors who are dermatologists in practice today, they don't even know about this original paper, where it came from. They have no earthly idea about the studies in the 1950s that it was done with artificial UV light. It was never done with sunlight. Then I bring up the point to them, because they also don't know what happened in the 50s, that tuberculosis used to be treated with solar exposure on the roofs of hospitals. In fact, the hospital I did my residency in has a solarium on the top of it. And we didn't have any of the TB drugs. And then I point out to them that even today, most TB is drug resistant in the world. And guess what? You know what still treats it? Sunlight. And it turns out it's the UVB part of the spectrum, the part of the spectrum that they try to hammer into heads of obedient idiots who believe that they're right. And the reason you believe they're right, because you think they're experts, until a guy like me comes along and shows you their Dunning-Kruger problem. In other words, they are unaware of what they don't know, and they're selling you a half-truth. And they falsely then tell people that taking vitamin D replaces solar exposure. Well, let me just tell you about what taking vitamin D is compared to getting it on your skin. It's akin to hiring a trainer in a gym to do your push-ups for you and thinking you're getting a benefit for it. It's not the way you're built. We are not designed to get vitamin D from most of our foods. It has an effect for high-latitude people like the Eskimos, but if you live, just for argument's sake, say in Atlanta right now, you are designed to be doing what I'm doing right now. Your shorts should be off. You should be in some shorts. It is a little bit chilly even here in New Orleans. I mean, chilly for us right now is about 60 degrees, but that sun is wonderful. I'm looking at my pond in front of me, and I can see the sublimation of the water going into the rays of the sun. And these are the things that you want to do. This time for me it's almost like I consider my religious church experience.
Yeah, it's your sacred time.
That's the truth. And the thing is, we need to get our patients to understand why this perspective is. Because here's the most important thing to me as a clinician. People will never change their behavior until they know why they're doing what they're doing. See, that's what makes humans different than lions and hippos, okay? Because naturally their brain tells them, wait a minute, this doctor is telling me something that is radically different than what I've heard my entire life. And you're right, I am. But I'm also going to tell you that because what you believe that those experts have told you is the reason why the disease paradigm is the way it is today. Because if you listen to what they tell you to do, you are going to be wallet-bopsied from the time you're 40 years old all the way until you're in a box.
So, okay, so we just have a few minutes left. So what I want to do is to wrap up our conversation is to give the key strategies for people. And I want to ask you one thing real quickly. What happens if people cannot watch the sunrise? Is there anything else they can do?
That's where evolution has the lesson for you. If you don't do what nature requires you to do, evolution has a plan. It's called survival of the fittest. You will feel her wrath. It's very simple. See, this is where the black swan mitochondria perspective isn't very popular. See, if you think you can work your way around natural universal law, that is the folly of a fool.
Okay, I hear that. So let's go back to the top strategies. Getting up in the morning and watching the sunrise for just 3, 4, or 5 minutes. Doesn't have to
be
longer than
that. Yeah, you don't have to do that much. And I would tell you, when you're driving into work, no matter if it's cold or not, if you're in the car, even if you have the heat on, I would tell you not to do that. But just roll the window down. You know, even if it's like, say, a quarter of an inch, because the way the way light works, it works by something called photoelectric effect. Never wear sunglasses. So in other words, never put a tarp over your eyes. And this is probably really important for your listeners to hear. I already told you the story about makeup, but let's explain the sunglasses or the glasses or contact story.
Okay, but we only have 2 minutes to do that in, so let's do it in 2 minutes.
All right. If you have an orange tree in your backyard, you come in and put water and nutrients in the ground, and you put a tarp over it, do you expect to get oranges? The answer is no. That's the reason why you never make the appropriate signals in your eye that generate all the hormones in your body through your pituitary gland. It's also the reason why you can't make vitamin D. So you're blocking animal photosynthesis. That's the reason why.
So, okay, and watch the sun. Give up your sunglasses, which I have done. Eat food that is grown in season, because that is in sync with our natural rhythms and frequencies, because we are seasonally beings. Everything changes, our microbiome changes seasonally. So we need to get back in harmony with
rhythm.
Well,
here's the key. That you just left me with a loaded question there. Maybe next time you get me back on, we'll talk about that. Light controls the microbiome, and light controls the food you eat. I agree with that completely. Just remember, the variation is greater the further from the equator. Jeff Leach, who's an unbelievable microbiome researcher, just did the most amazing paper that was published in Science. He fed the Hazda, who live in the equator, shit on a shingle. Like, all the things that you tell your patients not to eat, like Coca-Cola, crackers, and all that, he checked their microbiome, didn't change one bit. So the paradigm belief that food changes the microbiome, I'm going to tell you is false. You know what what dictates it? It's the light.
Light.
And
light.
Did I tell you earlier? On the equator, light never changes. And it turns out Hazda are in the light way more than your patients are. So the reason you have the belief you do about food is because it's a half-truth. And remember what I always tell people. When you believe a half-truth, always leads to a full lie.
And that's why, which we'll have to have another conversation, but that's why exposure to EMFs, which are frequencies, are affecting the microbiome and
exactly right.
Right, altering our health.
Especially when you consider that most of us work now in a tech environment, and you have to understand I tell people that the electromagnetic spectrum of sunlight only makes up 1/73 of the entire spectrum. You are built around 250 to 780 nanometer light. Turns out your cell phone right now is using two other parts of the spectrum that you're not optimized to work with, and guess what? That changes the free radical signaling in your mitochondria. That's what's making you sick. And blue light is never supposed to be present without the other healing frequencies. And guess what? Every tech screen, every TV, every laptop, everything we use is dominated by blue light.
Wow. So one of the other strategies, which I'll just mention really briefly, is to use blue blocking lenses, which I've been doing at night. You're not getting that midday blue light signal inappropriately and screwing everything up as a result.
Yeah, when I work in the office on computers, I have untinted raw optic blue tech lenses. And so that way my patients can't tell that I'm wearing sunglasses, you know, to protect my eyes from the blue light. When I'm in surgery, I actually use EPI 550 tints. And the reason I do that, the 550 refers to the nanometers that you're blocking up to. And it turns out blue and green light is what destroys melatonin the worst. And the mechanism is complex. Maybe the next time I get back on, I can lay all that out for you. Because that, to me, truly is the stuff that I love teaching people, to understand why the unopposed blue light is one of the worst things you could actually do to yourself. But I think wearing blue blockers anytime you're around man-made light is a wise thing. For ladies out there, I want you completely covered when you're in indoor light. And here's the flip side. I want you completely naked when you're in the sun.
Yep. We need more nudist colonies.
All right.
So on that note, you know, we will have you back, because I think your teachings and the knowledge and the wisdom you're sharing is just crucial. So we will have you back. And unfortunately, we're out of time. So I'm going to thank Dr. Jack Cruz for sharing his amazing wisdom with us today. I hope you will all pay attention and start putting these strategies in place. Get up, watch that sun. And until next time, thanks for joining me. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman. You've been listening to What Women Must Know. And remember, always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.